Welcome. We are the Projectile Lunchcast, a group of friends with a combined professional video games industry experience of over 20 years. More importantly, we have collectively been discussing video games for close to a century, including during most of our lunch breaks. People forced to witness these arguments kept telling us to just get a room and make a podcast. So that's what we did. We don't think they had any idea what they were bargaining for, yet here we are. And we couldn't be more excited to have you, dear listener, join us on this adventure.
Everybody, and welcome to Projectile Lunchcast episode 49. My name is Marcel. I'm super stoked to have you all with us. And us is not only myself, but of course also Richard.
I am also yourself.
And Busty.
49 already, wow.
Yeah, time does fly. And from what I heard, like, these two guys have something super amazing, special, surprising prepared for next week's episode 50. And I can't wait to find out about it. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're just doing a top 10 of our best Projectile Lunchcast episodes.
Ooh, a clip show. I love a clip show.
You know, like, I always loved those Simpsons clip shows. Like, they had some really good ones. And actually, that is a surprisingly almost good segue, you know, in the terms of when do you do a clip show when you run out of new, fresh ideas? Mm-hmm. And what sometimes video game companies do when they run out of new ideas is they try to hand at a spin-off.
Ooh.
And that is something that we want to take a look at this week. That was inspired, the idea originally, by the fact that this year we saw two fairly high-profile spin-off games in Minecraft Dungeons and in Gears Tactics. Mm-hmm. And in this case specifically, what was interesting to us is that both of them take well-established brands to a completely new and different genre,
right,
and a different audience also. And yeah, that got us curious, and so we thought, hey, maybe that is something we want to do an episode about and talk about, because, you know, we don't have any ideas left, and clip shows are, you know, like, a lot of work.
so we're trying to stay with spin-offs that are going into a new genre with this one, right? Not just the kind of closer to, I mean, I'm sure we'll have some examples that kind of get close there, but that was the interesting hook to me when you suggested we talk about this, is like, hey, you're taking a IP and going into a new genre, which is kind of cool.
So not Battlefield and Battlefield Bad Company.
Correct. Even though Bad Company is awesome.
Halo ODST, Halo Reach, whatever.
Right, like, right. Count.
Yeah, no, specifically this one, because, yeah, I think it's interesting to see the different approaches that different developers take for taking an established IP, a franchise, a series, a world, characters, whatever have you, you know, it can vary greatly, mm-hmm. And try to transplant it to a new genre. Like, sometimes it's super successful, as we're going to see, like, some of the most well-received games ever, strictly speaking, are spin-offs of something else. And, of course, there's also the pitfall that if you do something like that with a beloved series or characters that, you know, maybe... and it doesn't go the way the fans would want it to go or expect, right, then, you know, you end at the other end of the spectrum and people are super angry. And we also have some examples of that, I believe.
Super angry.
New brand. You had that one before.
Exactly. So,
that's a good example, if you know what I'm talking about, Marcel.
Yeah, there's been some good brand cheapenings. Is that a word, cheapenings? Yes, you can say
that. Yeah, we're making it a word, yeah.
We are pop culture, so.
Exactly. Put it on the merch.
So yeah, I was thinking, for starters, mm-hmm. as the resident marketing vampire, and obviously, you know, this being a branding topic in a way, I was looking at, you know, what are the reasons essentially why people do this, right?
Yeah.
Of course, at the end of the day, you know, if you want to be super baseline about things, then it's companies like making money. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, taking beloved stuff and selling it to nerds can be a very good way of making money.
Yep.
The best thing is, of course, like, even if the nerds hate it, they will still give you money usually. So
put that on the merch as well.
Yeah. So yeah, so what are some of the reasons that you know, stuff like this happens? This, of course, is in general, or some of these points are, you know, apply to all kinds of spin-offs, be it same genre, be it different genre, it can be multimedia stuff, whatever. But obviously, you know, it's like it's brand extension, simply. Like you okay. got a IP or franchise, you know, whatever wording you want to use, a world that has become super popular in one certain genre. And then, of course, doing spin-offs can be a very good way to try to, you know, reach a new audience. Because, for example, like let's say take something like Minecraft. Minecraft, of course, is, I believe, at least one of the top two best-selling games of all time.
It's got a cult following. It's a little niche, but yeah. Some people are into it.
But for example, you know, for me, it's it doesn't appeal to me. Like I've played it once for an hour for a charity stream, but I have not since felt the interest in playing Minecraft. However, Minecraft Dungeons, I like dungeon crawlers, fun games. You know, like Derigo, I spent time playing a Minecraft product, even if it's not the main game. So that can be a good strategy, you know, for stuff like that. It can also be for new platforms, of course,
mm-hmm.
Where you take, you know, like if what you had so far, like your core game IP franchise, is like closely aligned to one platform or so, not only genre, or maybe, you know, it's like a genre that specifically works in one platform, like, you know, strategy games are so working better on PC, then trying to do spin-offs can be a good way to try to, you know, reach a new audience on a new platform only. For example, one such example, very specifically to what I just mentioned, would have or could have been StarCraft Ghost. Of course, StarCraft being huge on PC as a real-time strategy game, and StarCraft Ghost and being a more console-appropriate action-adventure if it had come out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I don't believe I've mentioned this on a podcast before, but I played that game once.
What?
Yes, he did. Basti, don't feed him.
I think I've only mentioned like 3 or 4 times so far, which, you know, like in 50 episodes, 49 episodes, that's not too much, I feel.
Not enough for Korea.
Another example being that I've actually also played and I'm much less excited or proud of. The Witcher Battle Arena. Does one of you guys remember that one?
No idea what that is, to be honest. Because all I think of is Gwent.
No, The Witcher Battle Arena was a tablet MOBA.
Oh.
That came out.
Oh yeah, I remember.
So after
the board game style MOBA thing, right?
I don't know what a board game MOBA is, but it's a MOBA.
No, I have a vague memory of some screenshots and shit, but never played.
Are you thinking of the MOBA or the adventure game?
I think, there was also an adventure game, right?
Yeah, adventure game, that's a good one. Like, that's just literally a board game that it did a digital version of, and that's a good one. That is a good game.
Oh, okay.
The only good thing that's ever come out of tablet MOBAs was the commercial for that one.
Was it
great.
Glory?
Yeah, I think it might have been. Where the guy is like, there's a party next door, and he goes there and he becomes really cool by playing the tablet MOBA. That's fantastic. I'll find it.
It appealed to me. It appealed to my inner social butterfly coolness as a MOBA player.
Of course. So what are some other
Witcher
reasons?
Witcher Battle Arena was not the best game I've ever played. And like it quickly died. So that's maybe an example of a not so successful brand extension. of course, you're like it's a built-in audience that already exists. So for example, if you want to try something that's maybe a little bit riskier, of course you can slap an established brand on it, and you know there's going to be, as I just mentioned, there's going to be some nerds who are going to buy that shit. And I can say that because personally, I would be, you know, the prime audience for shit like that.
Right.
Where it's like, hey, here is some stupid shit, but we're going to put like Halo or whatever on it. And Marcel's going to be like, oh yeah, give me that.
Cheap Warhammer games have you played?
To be honest, not that many, but that is an entirely different case. Like, unfortunately, ever since the end of Warhammer Online, like, the Warhammer games have been really, really hit and miss. Like, there's some really good ones, and there's a ton, especially on mobile, there's a ton of trash.
They've been doing okay, though, with, like, with Total War and Vermintide. There's some decent stuff.
Yeah, but like there's Mechanicus, there's Gladius, but like for example, the mobile stuff specifically is often the cheapest stuff.
Sure.
Trash.
Oh, Mechanicus is on my bucket list though.
Dawn of War 3.
But yeah, for example, one good example. That's really good. That's good style, right?
Oh, yeah,
see that like my time at university is paying off here.
We should put a beat behind that.
But yeah, for example, one good example. That's really good. That's good style, right? Oh, by the way, fuck you, Richard.
What?
Fuck you.
What is going on?
Do you know what you did?
I know what
Tell
I did.
Tell us what you did.
Is this about your eternal tumbleweed?
I was just like taking a walk yesterday evening, listening to our podcast, and very specifically the part where I told you not to put in the fucking tumbleweed sound. What did you do, Richard?
I didn't put in the first one was crickets. This one was more of a desert wind.
Would you say that it was respectful towards the Avengers and the sacrifice that Captain America made for you?
We'll see about their sacrifice come end of summer. I'm waiting for that one.
But yes, for example,
yeah,
you know, with like building upon a built-in audience, Halo Wars is a very good example. Obviously, the RTS genre had never really caught on console up to that point specifically, still really hasn't to this day.
There's a couple.
Microsoft was really interested in trying to get that onto there, and you know what better way to get people interested into their first RTS game, their first RTS on consoles, than putting the Halo IP on it.
So this is actually a really cool example because it ties into some other stuff where it's like, you know, they'd already been talking about how Halo was originally an RTS. Which is
sorry, yeah. It was real-time tactics.
Yeah, it was tactical espionage action. It was already that, and like you said, the console RTS aspects of it. It was actually pretty well received, wasn't it?
It was a good game. Like they made the right choices. I think the problem with stuff like this is often when people try to just take something that works on one platform and just, you know, like one-to-one just cram that onto a different platform.
Right.
But this one, it was specifically built up from the ground up for console. They made some smart choices about controls and everything and the general gameplay. And I think, yeah, Halo Wars was a good game. It was a fun game.
I really liked it, yeah. I mean, yeah. It was successful enough to spawn a sequel, right? So.
Yes.
And they recorded a lot of different ways of saying all units. So it was a good time.
Yeah. Then sometimes you want to do a spin-off to try to rejuvenate an IP.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we already mentioned real-time strategy a couple times, so that's a good example. Sometimes it happens that you have a well-received popular IP that is stuck in a genre that is overall losing a little bit of its luster, right. And so you try to take that, you know, like to a new genre, and sometimes that doesn't work too well, unfortunately, as with Command & Conquer Renegade, when they tried to do a shooter in the Command & Conquer universe, which was actually a really, really fun game, and multiplayer was amazing, but it just didn't take off.
Right.
And sometimes it's a little bit more successful. So when you take Warcraft and make an MMORPG out of that, and you have one of the biggest games ever made. So
right, yeah. Sometimes it definitely rejuvenated that IP. And, you know, it really set them up for a softball swing because they just remastered Warcraft 3, and that was just gangbusters. Everybody loved it.
I would assume it still sold pretty good.
Yeah, probably. True.
I didn't buy it yet. So you see, even my consumerism has some narrow limits.
Iron will.
So yeah, that's, you know, like that's just off the top of my marketing vampire head, some of the reasons I could think of if somebody comes to me and be like, hey, why don't you do a spin-off or something of the thing you're working on?
Sure.
So I mean, you guys obviously also have some experience playing games and making video game stuff. So yeah. Basti, anything else that comes to your mind why you would want to think or why you would advise people to make a spin-off of whatever?
I think Richard mentioned that at some point, like the having a smaller medium-sized budget attached to that, it's also like a safe thing. I mean,
right.
The Nintendo, yeah. The Game Boy, what is it called? Nintendo 3DS, 3DS XL, whatever.
The Nintendo Game Boy 3D, 3DS XL, yes.
It will be forever the Game Boy. Is a good example for like, okay, you have like...
Yes, not to soccer moms, Busty.
It has... It is a machine which is not really good when it comes to hardware, etc. So, but it's fairly easy to reach a lot of people with maybe a game which is way, way cheaper to develop, right?
Right. That's something I noticed. I mean, is like a lot of these things do tend to be kind of smaller projects. I mean, like the Gears franchise is not waning. You know what I mean? Like they just put out Gears 5. Like they just put out Gears Funko, so I mean, there's
It is waning. Like, it's not at the level it was.
Well, of course, I mean, but you're never gonna hit that. Like, I don't think it was gonna stay like that. I think it's still a household name. I think it's still a flagship franchise. You know what I mean? I don't think
I would, however, like to take the opportunity of Busty mentioning I forgot what it was, the Game Boy 3D, 3D XL.
Yeah, Game Boy 3D, 3DS XL.
And want to point out that we got very, very close to being able to play Halo on that machine.
Yeah.
No.
Like what? Like Halo ass? Halo 1?
Yeah, like there was a lot of development done on a Halo version for a 3DS. There was a couple games. Like, there was Mech Assault that I played. That was quite fun. The Age of Empires and Age of Mythology were quite good on there. And, like, as one, probably, you know, as the crown jewel of those Xbox and Microsoft games coming with the 3DS, there were people working for quite a while. There's a lot of screenshots and stuff you can find online on a version of Halo.
Imagine you can play Halo on the upper screen while tickling Cortana with your pen on the lower screen.
Then you gotta attach.
How the fuck do you take something as pure as Halo and make it weird and weeby?
You gotta attach two separate joystick peripherals to the side of your 3DS to make it a Mecha 3DS. So yeah, no, I think you summed it up. Like the idea is, like, a lot of times, you know, to kind of shake it off and diversify, studios will definitely be interested in not being pigeonholed in making one type of game. So they're like, okay, what's a project we can kind of wet our feet with? You know, is it a small tactics game? Richard,
Do you know what I always have in my mind immediately if somebody uses the word diversify?
What?
You don't know?
No. What is it?
Obviously, Wu-Tang Financial. Going to diversify your portfolio.
Yeah. Well, that's probably how they were thinking.
Just like, I just love it.
That's what they were thinking when they were making the Wu-Tang fighting game. They had to diversify their potential. But yeah, like, so it can be a cool way for, you know, like, hey, we want to do a project. We want to do a smaller project to try something that we're not, you know, traditionally known for doing. But, you know, you don't set anything up for failure, and you don't just kind of throw something out in the wind. So if you do have the opportunity to put a cool IP or something that people know, you know, like you said, when it's that that built-in audience factor, you take advantage of that by putting in something that people know into something new. And there's a few good examples of that.
Isn't it weird that especially Blizzard tried a lot with the Warhammer point-and-click adventure and StarCraft Ghosts, etc., but then rarely followed through that? Because I think the video games industry is actually not that good in branching out with their IPs in other genres and things.
I mean
there
yeah.
are obviously examples which are better, but yeah. overall, in total, most big franchises IPs stick to the one genre, right?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. I think we'll definitely take a look here in a minute, and then actually, it'd probably be good to hold on to that idea and see if, after we're done talking about all this stuff, if you still feel that way, because that's a pretty good way of kind of approaching lessons learned for this whole thing. But yeah, like for the smaller project thing, I think it was Marcel you brought up Darksiders Genesis, right?
Yeah, and I think that is a very good example of. Right. You know, telling a story in that world, introducing another character, like making a new character playable for the first time. Obviously, it's a much smaller project and a probably, you know, a much cheaper project than like the full open world Darksiders games. But for me as a Darksiders fan, it was great. Like, it was a really fun game to play. You learned about new characters and stuff. So I think that is a very good example of, you know, taking a like that approach of maybe, you know, let's do something smaller in between, you know, obviously, and maybe that's also a topic for a future episode. Video games, of course, are getting more and more expensive. The right. timelines are getting longer and longer.
Right.
So of course, you know, stuff like this in between, like spin-offs, so especially if they're smaller, cheaper, can be a good way of, you know, keeping that IP fresh.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I think that the challenge really these days is, of course, I remember, like, back in the day when I started playing video games, I read my gaming magazine every month. And if, you know, if something was like, it got like an amazing score of like 9 or so, that was something to talk about. You know, people were like, man, this is amazing. And, but these days, you know, there's just nonstop barrage of entertainment stuff, like all the different streaming services, you know, Richard's TikTok channel, all the stuff. Like, it's really hard these days to, like, stay in people's minds through everything. So I think stuff like this in, you know, Darksiders Genesis, also, because obviously it seems that Darksiders 4 is going to be a while off. So stuff like this is a good way to really try to make sure that, you know, your fans don't forget about you the way you almost forgot about Dre.
What was it?
Kind of like spin-offs. Back in the days when console hardware was not as, let's say, unified, and not every console was a small PC as nowadays, PS2 had a shit ton of weird spin-offs from bigger PC franchise IPs, etc., who tried out of my mind, Brotherhood of Steel or the EverQuest games on PlayStation 2, etc. So the weird stuff on PlayStation 2.
Champions of Norrath was really good.
I never played it, was it?
We played, I mean, yeah, it was from the same guys who made Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance from Snowblind Studios.
Ah, true. Yeah.
And it was really good, like both of them. Like we even, we got together a couple nights to rent it from local video plays, like the four-player hub thing. So we could play four players on Champions of Norrath. It was a really good game.
As I played the PC game, the MMO, I was always like, what is it? Why? Weird. But yeah, maybe is it? I need to check if that is a game where I can get a used copy because I still have my PS2 and all my games here. So,
Time to get into Champions of Norrath.
Probably held up a lot better than the many games from that era. But yeah, I see. Like there was also Lords of EverQuest. If you remember that one,
yeah,
that did the reverse. Like they were like, so wait, if Blizzard's coming to poach our MMO country, like you know, Then we'll just make an RTS game instead, Lords of EverQuest. Let's say it was not as popular as Warcraft 3 or World of Warcraft.
That sounds like a shitty cover band.
Lords of EverQuest?
Yeah. Like they'll come play your Ren Faire and just do...
To be fair, like I've never played it. But like the rep it quickly got was that it was like a shitty cover band version of Warcraft.
Like yeah, here's...
Was not good.
Here's like Rock You Like a Hurricane on a lute.
I would listen to that.
I know. Well, you can join my cover band, Lords of EverQuest. We'll be at the Ren Faire.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of Ren Faires this year.
We show up anyway. We're the Lords of EverQuest. Here I am.
Also, I'm just watching a few screenshots from Lords of EverQuest right now. And I mean, the first thing which comes to my mind why the EverQuest IP is really shitty for an RTS. There is no, how you say that, Marcel, brand recognition? Like
it's generic as fuck.
It's so unbelievably generic. It's like just werewolves running around and dark elves and trolls and orcs and whatever. It's like, what is going on? But EverQuest was also never really good about that kind of like stuff. And I played a shit ton of EverQuest.
Even the fucking name's generic as fuck.
Yeah.
EverQuest sounds like a game that would be in a movie.
I tell you something.
No, but to be honest, like, I think like back then...
I was in EverQuest 1. That game, EverQuest 1, had not even a quest log.
See?
Disagree. I think back then, you're like, this being one of the first RPGs, like the first three, I think back then that was mind-blowing for people. And to call that, you know, EverQuest as like, you know, you can really like keep playing this with friends forever, I think that was a good name.
It was, to be honest, it was a mind-blowing experience for me.
Well, I didn't play it, so that means I get to be cynical about it.
Usually, the only thing that blows Busty's mind are fan arts of Cortana in a fursuit or tickling Cortana with the stylus on the 3DS, as we just learned.
Save me.
For a cover for this episode.
Oh, God. Move on.
No. Vito. Vito. Okay, so as my man Richard mentioned, we put together a list of some of the, what we think are, you know, some of the more successful and or popular spin-off games and some of the more, how do you say, reviled.
Infamous. Ones.
And Richard, what do you want to start with, like good or bad?
We got to start, you know, I usually like to start it with bad, build people up, and then just rain down about how everything is ultimately garbage afterwards. You know, leave them wanting less.
Tell her you're sexy.
Yeah, so that's okay. Hit me with a very successful spinoff.
A very successful spinoff. Let's see. So I went to my main source of education and life advice.
Yeah.
Which is Twitter.com.
Twitter.com.
And I asked people there to say, hey, you know, what are in your mind some of the. Some of examples where you think that a spin-off in a new genre actually surpassed the original.
Okay.
And my dear Twitter Mutual, as we call it, Richard, I don't know if you knew the word.
Never knew that. The term Mutual. No idea of it.
Kendrick, who is a bona fide strategy expert, immediately jumped in with a good example I hadn't thought of myself. Heroes of Might and Magic has become way more popular than Might and Magic RPGs.
True.
I would personally say rightfully so.
First of all, because I think the audio might have clipped out. Who are we shouting out for this awesome recommendation?
Kendrick.
Kendrick, thank you.
He's a good man.
Yeah. So, what were? Because I'm not up on Might and Magic as we discussed a few episodes back. But what were the originals?
Mighty Magic.
First yeah. person, the first person turn-based dungeon crawling.
Stuff
like Wizardry and shit.
Okay, like so I never played
any of them because they look old.
I think what was really good for that franchise with Heroes of Mighty Magic is I played a lot of them in old Amiga times and early PC days, and they got just surpassed by the Elder Scrolls series. So for them, it was probably just impossible to catch up with Elder Scrolls to change or evolve the original Mighty Magic series. And Heroes was just an awesome game. Like, I remember I sunk hundreds of hours. And I think it was also with that kind of like style, building cities, running around the map.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any other game like Heroes of Mighty Magic before? Like, with that exact like combination of genres and mixtures and how it played out? I can't remember seeing one.
No, I think Disciples was later. Lords came later. There was like a knockoff, I think, from Eastern Europe.
Disciples was also, I think, from Eastern Europe, right? Yes. Or was it even from Asia?
Do you guys
series, so.
Do you guys think that he might have missed the mark on this one a little bit, as we all know that the best Might and Magic game was Dark Messiah?
I mean, there's Dark Messiah. There is even the what was the game from Capybara called that was very well reviewed? Clash of Heroes, something.
That sounds like a mobile game.
What was it called? Wait, I'll find out. You guys keep reminiscing about. Heroes 3, I believe, is usually the most beloved one, right?
That's the one. But there's like eight of them, right?
How about Dark Messiah? I think like Dark Messiah became a little bit of a cult hit.
Yeah, because kicking people off of shit was really fun.
But it was not that successful at launch, right?
I'm not sure.
Recall correctly.
I don't think it was a huge hit, like financially at least it wasn't a huge hit, but yeah. Then again, you're like a cult hit that's not a huge financial hit, that is pretty much the subtitle of Arcane in a way.
Yeah.
Because their games are always great.
It rocked a
absolutely loved by the fans.
It rocked a 70 on Metacritic roughly.
Ooh. Deserved.
So yeah, Capybara Games made the Nintendo DS game. See, there we are back. Yeah. Spin-offs on DS.
Did it?
Might and Magic, Clash of Heroes. A puzzle strategy role-playing game that I believe was very well received back in the day.
Yeah, that's...
Including Strategy Game of the Year from IGN and Puzzle Game of the Year from Nintendo Power.
Damn. That's a really good...
The fourth best Nintendo DS game released in 2009 by Metacritic.
Every time I talk, are you going to say a Might and Magic fact? Or have you run out? Or is your clip empty? All right. So like I think that's I never did. I was gonna say the same thing. I never did either. That's why that's such a good example, right? Because like I wouldn't have known that there was like a standard Might and Magic series. I wasn't up on any of that stuff. That's awesome.
You know what's interesting? What here's or Mighty Magic series. This is an IP which had many successful games in different genres. While I played a ton of these games, and I cannot tell you. Like, if my life depends on it, about the world, races, names for races, etc. Like, the whole world building or whatever that is in the Mighty Magic series is blurry for me. Like, IP-wise, when you usually think what makes an IP strong, it's weird. Like, it more depends on how good is the single game, but the actual world building and all that kind of stuff behind the Mighty Magic series is rather weak.
Yeah.
I mean, in that way, it's kind of like EverQuest, isn't it? Like, it is...
Yeah.
Very intentionally, very generic in like how many high fantasy cliches can we cram into this world?
Yeah, true.
Of course, in their defense, you also have to say like this shit started in the 80s, so like a lot of the stuff that these days is just super cliche. Maybe it wasn't even that cliche back then, you know, because like they were one of the first ones to do that stuff. But of course, these days, yeah, like if you look at like Might and Magic stuff or EverQuest stuff these days, it's like, yeah, this is super generic that I've seen you 20 times since.
Sure. So do you want to keep the positive train rolling, or do you want to alternate into misery?
Let's alternate into misery.
All right. Do you want it real miserable or middle, or you want to start them off light?
Light misery.
Light misery. All right. Let's dive into Final Fantasy VII: Dirge of Cerberus.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that a shooter?
That's not Light Misery.
It was a shooter. When Square Enix put out or were they still Square back then? They put out FF7 and they were like, let's make every fucking game FF7. It will make us all the money. They did a few. Crisis Core actually has some fans, but I'm not sure how it released. I think Crisis Core came out kind of positive.
I love Crisis Core 2 bits.
Yeah, Crisis Core probably got a lot of love. What did not get a lot of love was Dirge Cerberus. So in the shooter, you play as Vincent Valentine a few years after Final Fantasy, where he kind of doesn't do much. It's pretty bland to talk about. Like, the game was just kind of, you made a shooter.
Look, it has even some interesting story elements, but nobody ever gets to that point except for YouTubers maybe, because the game is so horrible when it comes to gameplay. It's barely.
Okay,
barely
which one of you guys has played this game actually?
I've played this game.
I've played it and I have it here in my shelf.
I have not finished Dirge of Cerberus.
I was so hyped as a teenager. Oh my god! And then I got so disappointed.
That's because you had an emo phase.
It had an own Gakuto music video, and then I think one of the characters was modeled after this Gakuto guy.
Stop!
And then he sued them, and this is one of the reasons why you couldn't get a copy for a while of that game.
As I think
they're not allowed to remake that game.
Good lord! As I think we've discussed on this show, Gakt. I'm not saying it like that. Had his own game.
No idea how
it was also. It was also not fantastic.
So the game, I think the problem is Dirge of Cerberus, the game suffers from a horrible control scheme on the PS2, a horrible UI, but the actual game, the idea behind that game, I dig it. And some people managed to, so there is a hack on the original PS2 where you can actually jack in a mouse and a keyboard to the actual PS2 and play Dirge of Cerberus via, you can enable the console somehow, some weird ass shit. You can play that with the mouse and the keyboard. And then it actually seems to be rather okay. But the control scheme plus horrible frame rate and not the best dead zone on your gamepad made that game just unplayable. So I think it's rather unfortunate. Maybe if they would have had more time or better idea how to pull that one off, it could have been a great game.
One of the bad guys, his name is Vice the Immaculate. And Vincent is one... bottom tier character in Final Fantasy VII.
That's true.
It's bad.
Made some perfect for a spin-off, right?
It's bad.
Because if you fail and you use a bottom line character, you can just bury it. Also, every emo kid back then or Ghost kid back then loved Vincent.
Here's
my question.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Basti, you say you like the idea of it. So, why? And
because I really love the world they created with Final Fantasy VII and everything around it, and I also love third person shooters. And by the time to have that was specifically the idea of having a spin off like that. What I liked the idea that you have more games in different genres which just expand the world of Final Fantasy VII and let me experience that world in different ways. What I really really liked. Playing an action shooter, playing Vincent, seeing different, having different story tidbits, not playing an RPG for change. Unfortunately, yeah, the shooter was really, really bad. But I still would love to see more and more genres completely derailing. Let's say a shooter having an RPG or an RPG having a shooter. I love that idea.
You remember first person aiming in that game?
I think you could like zoom in for snapshots or whatever, right?
Good lord, man.
That game was, I think I managed to play it for like 2 hours or something, then I gave up.
Wacky.
And I even tried to replay it a couple of years ago via emulator and gave up again.
Yeah.
Maybe via emulator it isn't that bad, or I can, no.
It's that bad.
The game was not actually like the multiplayer didn't make it west. I think like
right.
They cut that out when it brought the game west. But yeah, like that was
what a shame.
I think that is one of the examples. So obviously, we have here in Basti a fan who said he liked it what he did. So that's absolutely that's fine. I respect that. But I think that is, for example, one of the things, or like, you know, spin-offs where it would probably be fairly easy to be cynical about it and say, oh, of course, and like they got this popular thing, shooters are popular, so let's just cram a emo vampire into a shooter because, you know, that's going to make money.
There were third-person shooters that popular in PS2 era. I mean, you had stuff like Gungrave, etc., but actually not that many.
I mean, that does. I think that it does kind of reek of, like, what do the Westerners like if they don't like RPGs?
True. Well, let's stop talking about Dirge of Fighters.
Agree.
Okay, then shall we look at a better one again?
Yes.
Example, I know.
Cheer me up.
I mean, it's like one of the first examples, and you know, if we give them shit for Dirge of Cerberus, so Richard, would you tell the audience a little bit about Final Fantasy Tactics and why you think that is a great example of doing a spin-off?
It is a great example of doing a spin-off, but it's kind of melancholy, right? Well, because it does take some of the familiar elements of Final Fantasy, which is something that they capitalize on and they strengthen a lot, like across all of the Final Fantasy games, which are, you know, anthologies, right? The stories are not directly interconnected most of the time, unless there's like a weird direct sequel sort of thing. A lot of the monsters and themes, like summons and stuff like that, are seen across a lot of titles. So it's kind of prime for that. I'm surprised they haven't done it more. Like, you get a couple spin-offs now and then. You get, like, Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon. But, you know, like, I would have expected a little bit more out of that, considering that, you know, a Chocobo is an instantly recognizable thing for a lot of gamers.
If you exclude the mobile market, there's a shit ton of stuff in mobile.
Yeah, but I mean, let's exclude the mobile market because it doesn't fit my fucking narrative. So like when Tactics came out, like it was cool because it was pretty much they hired I'm gonna try to say this guy's name wrong. Yatsumi Mutsuno, who was the dude who did Tactics Ogre, which itself is a Ogre Battle spinoff, right? So he's like kind of the pedigree on that, and he had it set up to do like the same thing that Ogre Battle does, where it's like the branching paths and really not holding the player's hand, and they made him tone that stuff down a bit. So it's this kind of interesting thing where they were like, look, that you know, Tactics Ogre is hardcore, but if you get a chance, like, it's been re-released all over the place, like, play fucking Tactics Ogre if you like Final Fantasy Tactics. It's the similarities you'll be very surprised by. It feels like they're in the same series. So they made him kind of go linear with the story for Final Fantasy Tactics. But yeah, like that came out. I think when people are talking about this, it's a really good example of it. It's a completely different genre. It does have a lot of the familiarities in terms of monsters and summons. It's, you know, since it's on PlayStation, it cannot escape FF7. Like, Cloud shows up. He's there in FF Tactics as like a kind of hidden, unlockable character. But I also think that it really, as FF7 kind of kickstarted the RPG rush on the PS1, like, Tactics kind of ushered in a little bit of the SRPG thing. I don't know if you'd see Nipponichi doing as much if that didn't kind of get a foothold in there, and I think they've done it better than a lot of other Tactics branch offs like Fallout, stuff like that. So I think it's definitely a cool example of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when I was younger,
mm-hmm.
I was very jealous of this game because I was playing on PC and being a big fantasy fan, and like back then mostly playing strategy and tactics stuff. I was super jealous of my friends for playing this game, and I would have loved to play it.
Did you ever get a chance to go back and play it?
Well, unfortunately, it's essentially impossible to play this game on any modern machine.
Is it really? I thought they were bringing this back.
I said it's essentially impossible to play this game on any modern machine.
No, that doesn't make any sense. They definitely put that back out.
There's no solution I can give you. Yeah. My PlayStation and copy. I can give you my PSP and the copy.
Yeah.
There are ways for you.
Gotta be ways, dude.
I was actually thinking about getting it for my iPad.
You should.
But unfortunately, there is no easily feasible way to play that game these days. I would love to, but
yeah. It's nature of the world.
You know how it goes.
Unfortunate.
Well, actually, that was like, it was not just this one, but that was for a long time for me personally as a PC player, that was the genre I was most jealous of for consoles. The like strategy RPGs,
mm-hmm.
like, because that felt like something that didn't really exist on a PC at all back then, and these days even I feel like it's still pretty rare.
You liked it so much that you finally embraced your inner weeb and got Disgaea, didn't you?
Oh no, I just played a demo for Disgaea.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I love Disgaea.
It's good stuff. Disgaea's good stuff. A lot of their stuff is good stuff.
You know, I'm at this point, I'm at the point where like nothing makes me more worried about a game than Busty saying he loves it. Hey Busty, do you love Avengers?
Say yes.
What was that again? Has it to do with the movies and the comic books?
Yeah, something like that. You know what's the most surprising thing here, to Richard, about like the little write-up you put here in the blog, in the thing?
Yeah.
The Metacritic of 83, like if you had asked me just purely from the rapid has, I would have guessed, oh yeah, like Final Fantasy Tactics probably like close to 90 or something.
No, I think it's, you know...
I would have thought it had been much better received critically, to be honest.
It's too smart for the masses, man.
Also, back then, I'm not sure, like, was it often, like, I have the feeling today, if you have, like, a really, really highly produced, big-ass AAA blockbuster with all the money put into animation, visuals, and storytelling, etc., then you have a chance to get a 90. But back then, in the PS1 times, was it often, like, a 90-plus game?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, 7, I'm sure.
I hear that weird game.
That's right.
With the sneaky guy.
Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, that's one.
Well,
no one play that these days.
Hey, Marcel.
Yeah, Richard.
If you want to get depressed, we can talk about Metal Gear.
Sure, why not? I mean, yeah, like so we agreed that Final Fantasy Tactics is a great example of
exactly.
Metal Gear Solid 4 had a Metacritic score of 94,
which is bullshit.
Four was fine.
Metal Gear Solid 2 had 96. Metal Gear Solid 1 had 94. Holy shit! Metal Gear Solid 5 had 95? What is going on with Metascores on this?
How about the Metacritic score for Metal Gear Survive?
59. What's that?
59.
No, I was a guess. I thought Busty's looking it up right now.
Busty is looking it up right now.
Metal Gear Survive War. No results found. This game doesn't exist. I'm sorry.
No, it's definitely Metal Gear Survive.
Survive. So it was on PC. 54, 460, and Xbox 62 for whatever reason.
Hey, but I was super close on average with my 59, right?
You were close.
Call me the Meta Whisperer.
That one. How much of Metal Gear Survive? I mean, okay, so I don't think it's a good game. I don't think it looks like a good game. How much of its hate comes from Kojima not being there and the general fuck Konami-ness of the times?
I think a lot, but to be honest, even without all that kind of like shit, that game is really bad.
This is fucking...
I mean, there's no way around it.
I think this is a great example of a team that kind of misses the mark by not knowing the IP that it has and by not knowing what to do with the new genre. I think the survival stuff is pretty bare bones. There is some, there's actually some really kind of neat elements, like the giant fucking insect bug lice thing that walks around in the desert forever and can't die. Like, that shit was fucking kind of cool. Like, they do dip their toes in the Kojima weirdness, but I don't think they go like beyond the premise, which is fucking batshit. Like, I don't think that they were self-serious enough. Like, Kojima would straight face that. He'd be like, no, motherfucker, it's parallel universes. Here's a scientific paper written by a French priest in 1432 that talks about it. I'm gonna read it to you in the game for 4 hours. Like, they didn't do any of that. So it's just kind of like zombies with crystals on their heads and craft.
Yeah, it feels really like they just tried to bank on the IP to just create a spin-off.
I think this is like, if we're gonna categorize it in Marcel's thing, I'd almost want to say it's like rejuvenate an IP, you know, because it's like, it wasn't that long after 5 at all, but I mean, everybody was pretty much like, oh, Kojima's gone. That is dead. And the shot that they took to prove them wrong. Yeah.
Here it's also, I feel like it's the same situation with Dirt of Cerberus.
Yeah.
Like, it's super easy to be, you know, cynical about like, oh yeah, what is popular in the West right now? Zombies, I guess. I mean, even then it felt like it was already at the tail end of the zombie craze, right? Like, it came way after.
But it wasn't at the tail end. Hype. it wasn't at the tail end of the survival game swell. Like, it came out during that, you know? So I think they thought they were being concurrent with it.
But I mean, so here's the thing, right? You just said, like, you know, that's an example of, like, a team not getting what the thing is. But, yeah. Like, do you honestly think that's a team's fault? Like, because this one, and of course with some of the things we heard about Konami, like, this one screams executive mandate to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think they didn't know what they were doing, because, you hit the nail on the head. You're talking about executive meddling, right? And Metal Gear is the last franchise you want to play it safe with. You can't play it safe. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw that, but, like, they have tried another... There's a few Metal Gear spinoffs that do different gameplay. You know, Acid and whatnot. But, I mean, like, Revengeance is a really good example of this. Like, yeah. They didn't try to do a lot of the Metal Gear thing, but they did enough of it. Like, there is the long, meandering, fucking talk forever boss shit. There is the absurdity that is played completely straight, like, over the top straight. The jokes are super fucking weird. Like, they did not play it safe with that. But Metal Gear Survive, it seems like, yeah, you know, like, they tried to... I think you put it perfectly. I think it really is just like a like when somebody makes like a blockbuster out of something, you know, like the Warcraft movie, maybe, you know, it's like, okay, how can we just turn this into cookie cutter movie, or, you know, how can we just make this survival game?
Hey, so let's pick a good one again, shall we?
Yes.
And maybe let's take something that is not Japanese for once.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems so... like, that also seemed to be a trend in the past.
Yeah.
Specifically to me, it seemed like that Japanese companies were leading way harder into the spin-off stuff.
Sure.
Like, you know, like 15 years or so ago, whereas these days it seems more evened out.
Yeah.
So let us go with The Sims. I believe The Sims is a spin-off of Sim Refinery.
Yes, Sim Refinery, yeah. which I mean, let's face it, we wouldn't have oil production without Sim Refinery.
Exactly, yeah. Zoom, zoom.
Yeah, Sims is a good one. I mean, come on,
Buffy, like, you've worked for years for EA. Give us the inside knowledge. Also, like, on the Sims community, because that is something I always found super fascinating. Because, like, a lot of the Sims players, like, you know, like, super hardcore people, like, super hardcore content creators and stuff, like, are people that... normally, you know, I wouldn't call them gamers in the sense of, like, that they play a wider stuff. Like, they just religiously play that one thing.
Yeah, the Sims community is very, very, very special. I do not even mean that in a negative way. Like, that is... to be honest, I think especially Sims could work with more... The Sims itself could have more spin-offs or multimedia franchises, comic books, whatever, that would probably work with that kind of, like, community.
There was a Sims spin-off for the DS, Busty, to prove you yet again right. Oh, what you said earlier. I forgot what it was called. My Sims or something?
It was Heroes of Might and Sims.
To be honest, I have not much insider or background info about the series. The only thing I can tell you is that I myself played 3, completely skipped 4, and the Sims community is very special, but I do not have much insights about that franchise. But because I'm not a real big Sims fan, the idea of, like, playing around with life, to toy with life, is something I was never really fond of.
So I have, like, a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Because you guys are both... in different ways, you know, being close to EA and, you know,
geniuses, okay.
Yeah, both geniuses. Is The Sims bigger than SimCity was?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's, like, a thing that I always remember when I talk to people about this stuff. The last time I was in a GameStop in the US, that was 2016, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like 5 PC games. Everything else was console. It was 5 physical PC games. There was StarCraft 2, something World of Warcraft, and then some Sim stuff. Like, it is at that. Like, if you look at PC sales charts, Sims is like a perennial seller. Like, that always sells. Both the base game keeps selling because they constantly have new expansions and stuff. obviously, you know, they're going to get a huge influx of new users because just this month, Sims 4 and all the content came to Steam as well. So yeah, Sims is, you know, it's
monetization.
Sims is one of those like sleeping giants where, like, if you ask a ton of people what are like the biggest gaming franchise in the world, many of them probably wouldn't mention Sims.
Yeah.
But purely looking at the sales and everything, I would absolutely say it's up there. Like, it's ridiculous how well it's doing.
Yeah. And it's also outlasted its original franchise, which is the second one we found, I guess, right? Like Heroes of Might and Magic, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Heroes of Might and Magic Skylines. Ooh.
That is an example of. I wouldn't even say it's and like, to be honest, we're like, when it was first recommended, like, both some people on Twitter saying it's a spin-off of Sims and Richard putting it on a list, of SimCity, I was tempted to say no. Like, it doesn't even feel like a spin-off to me. It's just something similar. But yeah, like, I think it's fair to say that these days, the Sims has easily eclipsed. I mean, Maxis is just like a Sims factory, right? Like, there is nothing SimCity.
One dude there who's like, maybe we can make SimCity, and they're like, never again. You saw what happened.
We all saw what happened.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, Sims, and as I said, like, the most fascinating thing for me about Sims is that. You know, it's kind of like the same thing like with Farmville or something, where people, you know, a lot of like the shooter bros or so would say, you know, these people are not gamers. But then you see the pure hours that people spend playing Sims.
Yeah.
Like, dude, if somebody playing like 30 hours a week is not a gamer.
Yeah,
then
they're absolutely garbage.
Like, it's like a super hardcore audience that's just like, you know, hardcore about this one specific franchise.
Did you guys ever watch any of this 100 Baby Challenge shit?
What?
Like, this is an established fucking thing for The Sims. It's like getting a character to have 100 babies. And I'm talking like multiple hours. Like, you could look that shit up on YouTube and it'll be like 100 Baby Challenge part fucking 42.
Holy shit, okay.
Like, it is almost like speedrun community level of Sims fucking madness.
Yeah, you know what? Like, that is a super hardcore audience.
You know what I found interesting? Last thing from my side for The Sims. We were talking about spin-offs. That is a spin-off where nobody knows or recognizes like any brand recognition to the main entry, you know? So, I mean, you had back then so many Sims whatever games.
Yeah.
But most of them were at least following the kind of like, this is like a top-down simulation of whatever, of ants building their hive or your city or whatever. But Sims... I'm sure that a lot of Sims fans don't even know that there is a serious kind of like... So at that point, does it even make it sense to call it a spin-off when there's actually no real tie-in except for it is a simulation, which is more genre than an IP, right?
Didn't the Sims live in SimCity?
No.
You're telling me the Sims never lived in SimCity?
Could be. I mean, wasn't there a game called Simsville that they worked on, but then like it canceled?
All right. Well, look, I'm not going to let you guys dismantle our premise. So the bad news is, for everything left on the bad list, it's all fucking nightmare territory.
Is it?
Well,
sure.
Let's go with something Japanese again. Let's say, hey, Richard, what's up with Samus and friends?
Oh, man, you're going to make me do fucking Metroid.
Oh yeah, let's do the Metroid.
Metroid, yeah, Metroid, fucking Metroid. So yeah, a host of two fantastic spinoffs, one being Metroid Federation Force. You remember Metroid Federation Force? Neither does fucking anyone else.
Isn't it that the characters don't even look like
Metroid characters with small robot things?
Yes.
Yeah, they were.
But this one is I wouldn't say people forgot about it. Like, this one is meme level of hated.
Yeah.
Like, frequently, when people say something online about like, you know, where's Metroid or whatever, like somebody will jump in and be like, "Hey, Federation Force," that is a universally reviled game.
I mean, so like, I didn't have to look very hard. I just wanted one quote, and I looked at the like third paragraph of the Destructoid review when that came out, and it was just like, throughout my time with it, I really felt it was clear that Next Level Games does not care about the source material. And, you know, that's one of the themes that we seem to be seeing a lot of it's like, hey, what makes Metroid really great? Is it Samus? Yeah. Is it, you know, a slight sense of horror? Is it Discovery? Is it like all the, you know, kind of sprawling maps? I mean, it's half of Metroidvania. Like, so, you know, they had all this stuff that they could have drawn on for Metroid. And what they picked was like, occasionally you can shoot a missile to open a door. So, I mean, it was a co-op game where the main character like loaded missions. The comparison can be made almost to like Monster Hunter, where it's like, hey, there's a bad thing that we're gonna co-op up and take it on, and it just fucking it got dunked, man. Federation Force.
See, like, to be fair, like, this, I disagree with this review.
Okay.
Like, I, you know, it's not on the contracted developer to care about the source material.
Right. Okay. So you're saying like Nintendo should have been like, hey, what the fuck?
Nintendo's brand, and if they asked them to make this game, you know, then that's Nintendo's job.
I agree. Yeah. Like, job.
I mean, you know, maybe they learned that lesson with which is why they did what they did to Prime 4. You know.
Could be.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is one more. It's not just Federation Force. There's also.
Go ahead.
There is also Metroid Other M, which is a action adventure or game. How would you call it? It's an action game, right?
Yeah.
By Team Ninja.
Yeah.
Creators of the modestly well-received Ninja Gaiden and the absolutely adored Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball series.
Right.
That's also a spinoff.
Right. Other man, the thing is, like, if you looked at like a trailer for Other M, you could almost be like, yo, okay, they're doing a fucking Metroid game. I see Samus. I see jumping. I see some kind of 2D, 3D goodness, you know? Whereas like I think if you watch any footage of Federation Force, you'd be like, and you had no idea, nobody would be like, oh, that's a Metroid game. You know, this one at least looks like someone tried to modernize a Metroid game.
If especially the feeling is the world behind Metroid games is usually as vague as a Dark Souls game.
Yeah, yeah.
They tried to make like a kind of like a proper world building to maybe evolve the franchise into a direction of like, oh, you're human, other human characters. The world makes kind of like sense in a way because we have a story to tell this time. Mm. I think, to be honest, that maybe the original pitch and the idea they had was absolutely well thought through, and they thought, hey, this is a good direction we move in.
True.
I'll give them that.
I think the thing, so I've never played the game, but I believe what sticks out the most here to me, that I remember the most, is fans complaining about the cutscene where she does like the thumbs down thing, where people say like, you know, that it completely missed the character of Samus, like, instead of like being like this heart-bitten bounty hunter, like she's some kind of like sassy schoolgirl or some shit, I don't know.
Thumbs down means you suck.
Yeah, something like that. So, like, that seemed to be the thing that really, like, a lot of fans really got hung up on.
Story was incredibly cringy, though.
And you know what? Like,
I haven't played it, I don't know.
Here's my thing is, like, I think they've fucked that. I think Nintendo's fucked that up, too. Like, ever since Zero Suit Samus, like, fuck off, man. You had something you could have gone. It seems so clear that like, they were trying to ape, like, Ripley. You know, the whole alien vibe of, like, being tough first in the armor, and then it's like, you know, give us a few years. We found a way to put her in a fucking cat suit. They did the same kind of shit in Other M, too. I don't know.
No.
So, yeah, that's a bad Metroid
spin-off. So you have both played Metroid games in the past, right? Like, the classic 2D Metroid,
Love
right?
me some Metroid.
Super Metroid and some shit.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that we've agreed that these spin-offs are bad because they missed the point, what is for both of you, how would you actually, you know, say what is to you the core of Metroid? What makes that franchise?
Bast, you go first. Okay, I'll go first.
Not being bound to 2D. Like, I think the general exploration, then backtracking to further find secrets, to open different tracks, like the general Metroidvania kind of like gameplay right. style. I think it's pretty clear with Metroid, and I think you can translate that in 3D, in first person, whatever. I think the DNA with Metroid's pretty clear. Maybe Richard's better phrasing that together in a sentence.
I don't know. Everybody's gonna have their own opinion, and it's a fun exercise to do. But it's like, for me, it is that kind of Aliens movie vibe of derelict space locations. Yeah, I totally agree with the backtracking and unlocking a map thing was what that became very clearly. And then I do think that there is an air of mystery that can be kind of put in. I usually don't like it when they try to tell a story with Metroid. I kind of dug, yeah, like oh, what the fuck is Ridley? Who are the space pirates? Why is Samus doing this? She's just a bounty hunter. Get the thing or fucking destroy
Ridley,
the thing.
Ridley, like a pteranodon or something?
Yeah, he's like a metal pterodactyl or some shit.
The space pirates are so ridiculous in general.
Yeah, I think
tell a proper story around that weird stuff.
Exactly, like that. That's what I would think the main things of a Metroid game are. Yeah.
So if you both can agree what that is, so then Richard, then please explain why Metroid Prime are held up as examples of essentially spin-offs that do everything right. Because I remember, like, when the first announcement was a huge drama, people were like, oh my god, Metroid's going to be a Halo clone and shit, this is going to be terrible. And then it came out, everybody was like, this is absolutely amazing.
I absolutely love Metroid Prime.
I think they
did everything right.
Yeah, they kept a hard focus on exploration and level traversal that you usually don't see.
They absolutely nailed that.
Yep.
Nailed that.
They usually don't see. They did the callbacks in the right place. They got the ball. They got the missiles, ice beam, shit like that. Like they did that well. Samus was there and wearing armor. And didn't talk much, right? Am I remembering that right? She didn't say it. She was pretty silent protag, right?
I don't know. I only played for like 30 minutes or so.
Oh, Metroid Prime's good. And the other thing they nailed that you can kind of put on this for a lot of these is like, how much better would this spinoff have been if it was just like a really good game? Like it was a fucking good game. Like boss design was really awesome. Enemy design was really cool. It was fun to fucking play. I don't think it gets enough applause. I'm glad they're remastering it, supposedly, apparently. I'll play them again.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, people have been saying that for a long time, and it has yet to materialize.
It needs to happen.
Do it. Would love to play that on my Switch.
Okay. Then, so yeah, that is an example of a very well done, because as both of you summed it up, like it really managed to distill what like the essence of Metroid is, regardless of the camera perspective or whatever. What is it all about? And you like successfully transplant that to a different perspective, different gameplay. But like it just felt like Metroid, and yeah, it is absolutely a beloved series, Metroid Prime. Is Metroid Prime these days more popular than 2D Metroid or more beloved?
Well, I don't know. Those handheld 2D Metroids were pretty fucking well received too. And they haven't made a Prime. I don't know. I wouldn't say.
Kind of hard to say right now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Let's see how Prime 4 comes out. Let's see what happens.
That's fair enough. Okay, let's take one last not so well received one. What would you like to go with, Richard? Do you want to go Nintendo? Because obviously Nintendo has a ton of spin-offs where like for a while everything was Mario or some shit.
True.
What would you like to talk about Resident Evil, which has also a very divisive tradition of spin-offs.
If we're coming up on time, I think the rest of these, I think the rest of these we can do relatively quickly. So let me, you want me to speed run the rest of the baddens?
Go for it. I love me some Richard speed running of bad stuff.
Okay, here's who super fucked up every spin-off they've ever fucking done. Mostly Resident Evil. Jesus, they did 4 fucking light gun games, boys.
Yeah.
4. The highest they ever scored with them was a 75 with Umbrella Chronicles. So, not great. Resident Evil Survivor is also meme-worthy. Watch that shit sometime. Fucking garbage.
Light gun, okay.
Yeah, also a light gun game. Then they also...
City, is that the multiplayer shooter? Or like the shooter they did like 5 years or so ago?
Yes. So they did their kind of...
Western developer, right?
Yes.
Who then afterwards went bankrupt, I think, after that game.
But you know, some things happen. And then most recently, Umbrella Corps. Which was also like COD with zombies. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, Resident Evil spinoffs. They did a couple other, like Code Veronica, I guess, if you want to count the name stuff. Everything where they stick close is pretty decent. Who else can we fault? I wanted to put in a quick mention for every time a fucking fighting game has tried a brawler, because none of them are better than the brawler mode in Tekken 3. But Death by Degrees, a brawler beat 'em up starring Nina Williams. If you're interested, boys, the gimmick mechanic in this was that as she took damage, her clothes ripped off. Yeah. Also, special mentions to both Mortal Kombat Mythologies games, Special Forces and Sub-Zero, for being fucking whack, man.
What kind of genre? I never heard about that one.
Special Forces and they were like side-scrolling beat 'em ups.
Okay.
But they kept the controls of the fighting game. It's fucking wacky. I dare you to try it. Like, imagine playing Mortal Kombat. You've played Mortal Kombat, right?
Yeah.
Imagine playing Mortal Kombat, but with platforming sections.
Ooh.
It's fucking harsh. They finally, and I wanted to mention to their credit, they finally did that okay with Shaolin Monks, which is fucking fun. And should be celebrated. Shaolin Monks is dope. But yeah, for the last of the negativity parade, Marcel, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Philips CDI Nintendo stuff.
Maybe that's something you have to bring some of our younger listeners up to speed on, because I think that is fairly obscure shit by now.
It is fairly obscure. So Philips put out a multimedia game sort of thing called the CDI. And for that, they had three top of my head, three. There might have been more, but the three worst were Nintendo licensed games. So one was Hotel Mario, which motherfucker. Like, look all these up. If you guys are young and you haven't been, I'm sure there is tons of material that exists on the internet that you will get an impression of this real quick. But like, Hotel Mario was like Mario has to go through, there's like 10 doors on the screen. You have to keep going through the doors and collect all the coins. It is some fucking not platformy shit at all. It's super rough. It's almost like it's hard to describe. Look up Hotel Mario. Definitely look up the two adventure games for Legend of Zelda. I think they were just called Zelda, but there's
Link, actually.
Was it Link? No, because Zelda, like, Wanda Gamelon is Zelda. But I think it wasn't Legend of. I think it was just Zelda. Yeah, it could have been Faces of Evil. Could have been like The Adventures of Link, Faces of Evil.
I bet that even younger people know that one without even knowing where it's coming from, because that is also that got memed the shit out of this weird. Oh my god, that is so weird.
Let's see if you're right, because like me and Marcel were talking about. Yes, it did get memed out of, but I think everybody confuses a lot of the old school Zelda memes for the cartoon, which is where you get Princess.
Exactly. That's like when you brought it up, I thought like, oh, the excuse me, princess.
Nah.
And yes, you're right. That's from the cartoon. That's my bad.
That's from the cartoon. Wanda Gamelon would absolutely get fucking memed on. Like, watch that shit. It looks like it was drawn by a fucking 8-year-old. I don't know who's responsible for Wanda Gamelon. Guys, just if you've heard of it, then you know it. And, you know, this is, you've heard about it enough to where it's like, yeah, I get it, get on with it. But if you haven't, man, at least look up anything on YouTube about Wanda Gamelon and the Philips CDI Nintendo games, because Jesus. I just saw Basti copy it off of our shared notes. Too cool. Okay, Marcel, I've dragged this down enough. By all means, bring us out with the positive stuff.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, like, I asked people on Twitter, and I was immediately buried in a barrage of suggestions, many of which either didn't fit the description or, like, there could be a good argument made about it. For example, people saying Apex Legends is bigger than Titanfall right now, which is true.
True.
But then, of course, the question is, like, is a battle royale, essentially a different genre from a first-person shooter.
Right.
I don't know. You know, the same thing with Forza Horizon, which is definitely better received these days than the main Forza Motorsport series. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's like arcadey driving, that different from simulation driving. You know, that's So we decided maybe, you know, like that's not quite what we were looking for yet, but like both of these are of course examples of something where a spin-off has you know surpassed the original thing in popularity and success. Right.
Just little tweaks to that stuff, you know? Like can pretty much change it. I mean, I think we thought of like Mega Man X or Symphony of the Night, where it's like not Castlevania gameplay, but it is now synonymous with what Castlevania is. It's a great game.
I played that game.
Yeah.
Oh, you believe me, Ness.
I do.
I'm not used to that.
I thought you actually played that game.
Yeah, I did play that game for like 3 hours or something like that.
Better than you usually
on
do.
The Xbox Live Arcade.
All right.
And yes, I think obviously the game that I believe deserves a shout out because it is a spin-off that has not only surpassed and completely eclipsed the original when it comes to cultural impact, but has become a bona fide like cultural touchstone for years. I think that's obviously World of Warcraft.
I think it deserves more than a shout out, man. I think this is exactly what we're.
Yeah.
Like this is the example. Like this is. This is the way, you know, the best, I think this is like the best possible way a genre spinoff can go. It can't get better than this, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like financially, definitely, I would say it cannot get any better than this, you know, because yeah, it's been a world conquering juggernaut.
Yeah.
I think it also, in a way, like it underlines a little bit like the issue that a lot of fans often have with spinoffs, because what frequently happens is like you have a somewhat dormant brand or something. I mean, like in this case, it wasn't even that. Like, you know, World of Warcraft was still relatively Warcraft 3 was still relatively fresh. It was super well received. It was a great game when World of Warcraft came out. But like, what sometimes happens with spin-offs, like a series is a little bit dormant or so, and something new and different comes out. And a lot of players say, hey, you know, fuck that. This is not why I love the series. And then others will argue, yes, but you know, if this helps rejuvenate the series, and that can sometimes happen. In this case, however, of course, what happened is that World of Warcraft became such a all-conquering juggernaut that, you know, nothing has ever happened with Warcraft besides the Reforged release earlier this year, which maybe was not the best advice thing Blizzard has ever done. So yeah, I think that is also like the thing that if a spin-off becomes too successful, as clearly has happened here, then maybe the company loses the incentive, or like I think the same thing is happening with Apex Legends.
Yeah.
You know, we know that, Vincent Pella has said that there's currently no Titanfall 3 in the works because Apex has become such a huge hit.
Very, very sad.
So, yeah, I think that is like really the only negative or like the downside that can happen for like sometimes for fans. Like if you're not, you know, if your love with a thing is not based on the world or something like that, but specifically about the gameplay, and suddenly that world and the characters you've grown to know, you know, to know is transplanted to a completely different genre that you do not like, that can of course then be a bit disappointment, I think.
You couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, this is they took the stuff that was good, they made it recognizable, they blew it up. I mean, like the storylines are directly continued or referenced, or I mean, the lore was born out of this, like, more, like, you know, like, it's a cultural touchstone, like you said. I mean, fuck. Like, I think they did everything right. I also got a little bit lucky, I'm sure, but come on. Like, they knew what they were making. They know what Warcraft is, and that shows, you know?
Yeah, it's also quite interesting that a company doing something for the first time in a genre, it's probably kind of unusual that they have this level of success. But yeah, as you say, you know, it's I feel like if you look at like all of the biggest games, Minecraft, Fortnite, World of Warcraft, whatever,
right,
like it's always a very specific moment in time where just you have the singularity of everything coming together. And so yeah, I think like essentially the success of games like this is like a freak accident that you cannot plan for or cannot replicate or so. It's just, you know, if something like this happens, you know, thank whatever gods you believe in and cross your fingers.
Many people try to unmystify that formula, what made Blizzard so huge, and most of them failed.
Yeah. True.
True. So yeah, that was I feel like it was a quite interesting discussion we had today.
Yeah.
I learned so much about... Sorry, I forgot all the stuff Richard was talking about.
That happens all the time.
No, I actually learned that Basti liked and played and owns Dirge of Cerberus. That was new to me. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Richard once again reminded me of the Philips CD-i Nintendo titles, and that they're different from the cartoons, actually. So, Basti, any parting thoughts and or self plugs? Twitter self plugs.
Give me more spin-offs and hit me up on Twitter at Bastian Thun, Thun, if you want to discuss with me crazy spin-off ideas, because I think there are many franchises who could use medium, smaller, whatever weird spin-offs. Give me more of that.
Okay, Richard, where can people send you their Dirge of Cerberus erotic fan art to?
Excuse me, I'm not just a Dirge of Cerberus erotic fan art collector. I do have parting thoughts, Marcel.
Oh, please.
I have a thesis.
I didn't want to cut you off.
Yeah, no, it's fine. For game teams, one of the things we do a lot is when we're talking about a project and building it up, but we do talk about game teams on the project a lot and how games are made on the podcast, I mean. And one of the things I like to try and enforce or remind people or ask people to consider is the inclusion of other viewpoints. You know what I mean? It's not just about having diversity in your team, which is also obviously very important, but it's like include non-typical game teams in this. So for what I was thinking with this topic that would be really neat is actually an inclusion from more traditional marketing practices. You usually don't think of marketing being super involved in when games are getting planned, but maybe they should be more. I think one of the things I've noticed some marketing people, and correct me if I'm wrong, because one of us knows more about it than the other. But like a big part of marketing is understanding what your brand identity is, right?
Of course.
And that is, if they're doing it right, in my opinion, not different from understanding what the project's identity is. What makes this title? What makes this series this series? What are the inherent parts that make up whatever this is? And I think if some of these guys sat down and approached it like that, like really identified their component parts, what is a Metroid game? What is a Resident Evil game? What is this stuff? And maybe asked their brand people to kind of help guide them in that process, they probably would have come out with better games. Instead of playing it safe and just trying to put out some weird shit. So those are my parting thoughts. All right. And they're very serious. If you'd like to engage in a discussion with me about my serious thoughts, you can hit me up at Heroes of Light, Jazz, and Magic. It is my Ren Faire cover band. We do all that stuff. Smooth rock, light jazz. Please,
And
please
rocked you
send.
like a hurricane, I hope.
And rock you like a hurricane, but on a lute.
Again, like I would love to hear that, man. Like
Yeah.
that speaks to everything
Yeah.
that I'm as a half German are about.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that was great. Thank you guys. As always, of course, dear listeners, you can like and or subscribe to our Twitch, sorry, our Twitch, got our Twitter channel at Plungecast, P Lungecast, Plungecast.
Plungecast.
To share more thoughts. These two fine gentlemen will be back next week with a new episode that I will probably be sitting out for, clashing scheduling reasons, but I'm super excited to see what they have planned.
Yeah,
Because I
nobody
have
can
no
stop
clue
us
and
anymore.
they're not telling me. I assume it's gonna be weep as shit.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Of course you can also talk to me on Twitter at com underscore Raven. And really, the only thing I can say is that it's super lamentable that there is no easy at all way to play Final Fantasy Tactics on any modern system. That's a real shame
Motherfucker.
right there. So,
Motherfucker.
Richard, anything else or?
I mean, no, I don't. You do the thing where you say that, it was nice to be listened to, and
Okay, well, yeah,
yeah, just wrap
it
it
was
up.
very nice to be listened to by the audience. We look
Yeah.
forward to
Hey.
well, these two guys look forward
Hey.
to being listened to.
Hey,
Yes, Richard,
Marcel.
please. Yes,
Hey,
yes,
Marcel.
yes, yes, Richard, yeah.
What's the popular spin-off to Skyrim? It's
Oblivion?
Skyrim on every fucking console ever. It's on my fucking smart fridge. What the fuck, man? They didn't spin off shit. They did a fucking mobile game. Heroes of fucking click to build the town. Just bring back Morrowind, get it out of a fucking RPG. Spin that shit off. Make a card game out of it, I guess. Instead, you fucking God damn it, Todd Howard.
That game is on Switch now, you know?
We be old school. Yeah, old school. We be old school. Yeah, old school. Been getting that money for a girl sweet as honey. Got me some roses and a little bling. I knocked on her door, she said, "What you waiting for? I heard you was looking for a king."